Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's up? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Thank you so much for being here. I created this show for you, finding the best humans on the planet to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking. Let's do this. I want to introduce you to someone here that I hope I don't butcher his name too badly, but it's Simon Osomo. Is that right?
That is very close, Osomo. So I'll give you
the American
pronunciation. I'll give you that, Nina.
Okay, great. He is an author. He's a podcaster. He's a safety expert and a speaker, a mindset. He does podcast coaching and the host of Who I Became. It's a podcast encouraging you to live a life of significance. And he believes that adversity is a gift. I believe that as well. And Simon now coaches young men to never give up. Simon, you have a lot of stuff going on, right? Because,
yeah,
I mean, you're a podcaster, you're a safety expert, you're a speaker, you're a mindset, you're a podcast coach. I mean, I love it because it keeps you growing, right? It just keeps you challenging yourself and growing and pushing yourself to be somebody better. So thank you for taking the time to be here today. I appreciate you.
Well, no, it's a pleasure to be here. And I must say, as podcast names go, yours is incredible. I like it. No Added Sugar. That is a great name for a podcast. So I'm excited for this conversation today. I really am. Looking forward to it.
Me too. And so the way I like to always start my show is just, I always give a small snippet of who you are, but I'd like to know a little bit more. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'll try and cut it brief because for quite a young man, I say I'm still quite young, I've had a lot of stuff go on in my life, but I'll tell for your audience that I'm British, now living in America. I've been in the US for 10 years. Actually, I'm just in the final stages of getting my American citizenship. So if there's any listeners out there who want to help me with that test, please reach out to me. There's like 100 questions I've got to get 10 right. So I'm a little bit nervous. So I moved here 10 years ago. My background in the UK was organized crime, sort of counter-terrorism a little bit, and sort of a lot of covert operations in the police. And moved here after serving just short of 14 years, I think it was, that I served. But my background really goes back a little bit before my police career. But my mum is white English, my dad is Nigerian, and part of my journey is that I've never met my father. My mum never remarried. She raised me and my two sisters. She went on to foster sort of over 30 children to sort of help bring in income. And I've got two younger adopted brothers. I just say they're adopted just for reference, really. So sort of, I was the youngest and then I became the middle. So I have the best of both worlds. I'm no longer the young kid. But, you know, during that time, sort of growing up, you know, there was a lot of adversity. I was born to a mixed race couple. absent father, living in sort of a very poor, sort of humble backgrounds. We were a happy family, but very, very humble, and very much living in a white middle class area. So my views and opinions might be very different than some sort of African Americans over here from their experiences. Most of my experiences growing up were quite good, and I've never considered myself a victim. When other people have put the sort of victim good label on me, that's not something that I really recognized. And you know, I sort of moved here to the US. My wife is American. That's what brought a foreign man here. Generally, when you see a man in a foreign land, it's because there's a woman somewhere behind it.
Right.
Yeah.
Funny.
And from there, I sort of drifted. Well, not drifted. I've always been quite intentional in the things that I've done. But I ended up being the head of counterterrorism at Mall of America. So your American audience might know of Mall of America as one of the largest entertainment and retail companies, like 7 million square feet now, something like that. You know, a very large terrorism target. A lot of safety and security goes into making sure everyone stays safe there. And from there, I drifted into risk management. And more recently, I'm a believer, a man of faith. I've drifted into helping nonprofits around safety and security. Just by chance, really, believe it or not, I'd come back from presenting at Disney to a large sports conference. 300 people, sort of flagship, all expense paid. And a friend said one night, "Can you come and talk to my church on safety and security?" And I said, "Well, I can do. I've never really put the two together." And I went there one Wednesday night. I don't believe they really understood my English accent, Nina. I think they were struggling with the accent, but they said it sounded good. And I just gave them some basic tips on safety and security. And I came away realizing there's so much risk, which isn't really managed effectively in nonprofits. And I've sort of made it my mission in the sort of preceding 8-9 years to help nonprofits around risk management. As you said, I've written a couple of books on the subject. So there's so many different nuances to sort of who I am. And most recently I developed my podcast, Who I Became, because clearly you can hear from my background, I've always been fascinated with how people became who they became. And so I focus on self-discoveries, transformations, and sort of life pivots. And I just love to talk to my guests and understand, you know, how they got there. We often see the end result, and that's what the world judges us on. You know, and some people look at me and say, "Well, Simon, you're successful. You've done these things." Well, hang on. There's a lot of adversity. There's a lot of things I had to get to where I am. So I really like to unpack people's personal journeys, because I believe that we all learn through stories. So as much as I can, Nina, that is my life in 4 minutes.
No, that's fantastic. And I'm the same way. I love to unpack people's lives and stories. I think there's just so much more than just the covering that we give, right? I mean, there's so many nuances to everything you said. You know, let's start a little bit from where you started. So you didn't know your father. So your father was absent from your life and your mom never remarried. So how was that for you growing up, especially not having like that father? Or did you have a father figure? Maybe you had uncles or cousins or something.
No. And so here's the interesting thing. There was, you know, a lot of estrogen in the household, but not much testosterone. You know, my mum has sisters, you know, she there's no uncle, so there wasn't too much of a male figure in my life. And it's been interesting on that, because, you know, sharing some personal journey. You know, so I've never met my father, and I made a decision when I was 13, 14. There's been a lot of hurt and pain in my family, but I sort of chose not to ask my mum any details around it, because I know that she had a very hard time in that relationship. And in later years, I'm 43 now, you know, my mum and myself, just by text message, because it's still difficult, you know, we've opened up a little bit about, you know, the modern way to communicate, isn't it, by text message. You know, she sort of said, you know, "I'm sorry, but you didn't have sort of a father figure in your life." And I said, "Mum, you know," I said, "that's okay. That's sometimes how things work out, but it's what do I do with that going forward?" So there has been clear times in my life when I've wanted that, you know, seeing people at soccer games, you know, / football games in England where their father's there cheering them on. And I've never had that, you know, I've never had that person sort of championing for me. But it was a significant time in my life where I joined the police at 19, became a detective in 2002, 2003, I think it was. So I was a very young detective. I was
very young.
20, 22, 23 years old, very different than here in the US. And there was a key time when I'd applied for a position in the police. And the chief of police, if you like, had to sign off your application. I wanted to sort of join the firearms team. And the chief of police, English equivalent, wasn't in the station that day, so he couldn't sign off my application. And there was another senior leader, Benamor, which is English, sort of murder mysteries, with detective chief superintendent, which is also a very high ranking police officer. My application for the firearms team landed on his desk, and that gentleman was called Melvin Young. And I was off site at the time outside the police station. He called me and said, hey, you know, before you leave, can you come back in to the police station? I said, well, yeah, I'm doing a few things, you know, so maybe I can, you know, have you signed off my application for the firearms team? And I did go in and see him. He said, Simon, you know, I can sign this off for you with my blessing. I think you're a very strong candidate. But have you ever considered being a detective? And I said, well, you know, sort of not really. This is a path that I want to sort of go down. And sort of, you know, dismissed it. He signed off my application. And then a senior leader in between, a chief inspector, a couple of weeks later, he said, Simon, have you submitted your application for being a detective? And I said, well, no, sir, that, you know, that with respect, sir, as in I'm not listening to you. You know, I sort of said that, you know, with respect, sir, you know, I want to go in a different direction. He said, Simon, you know, you didn't understand what he was saying. He wasn't asking you, he was telling you. And I did go on to apply to become a detective. And naturally, you know, I got through that process. And it was a really, it was a key moment in my time, Nina, because never had a sort of a father, never having a male role model. What I look back on now is that Melvin Young, I start giving him more credit than what I've ever really understood before, because he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And so there's been a lot of learning, a lot of self-discovery myself in that phase of my life. And I now try to take that teaching and learning and then pay it forward. So I can't help but speak up if I see a young man going down a wrong path, making a wrong decision, because, you know, sometimes you need someone in your life that can either see something in you or be your champion. That is part of a role of a father, is to inspire, to lead, to guide and stuff. So it's and there's been a few people like him since, but that was where I really acknowledged what I was lacking, and then I've gone on to sort of try and find that in sort of more mature relationships.
That's so fantastic. And, you know, I want to like touch a little bit on do you have children yourself?
I do, yeah. I've got two sons, 8 and 10. Sons. So, you know,
boys. Awesome. Yeah. How has that affected you being a dad? Like, have you know, do you feel like did you feel a little scared, like you wouldn't have the skill set, like when you knew that your wife was having the you know, your first son? Are they twins? No, right?
No, they're not twins. No, okay, no, okay. 8 and 10, so, different ages. Yeah. But that's
oh, yeah, 8 to 10, right. Yeah. So were you afraid? Were you afraid?
Yes, sir, and that's a great question. So I've never been afraid. It's allowed me, I think, to rewrite the sort of rewrite my story. That's one of the sort of things that I teach, and like, you know, having the ability to rewrite your story and make a change. So here's the challenge where I've been faced around that. Maybe some of your listeners can relate. There could be a wife who's saying, yeah, that's my husband, or it could be a man listening saying, that's me. Is that because I didn't have a father, I had some sort of preconceived ideas as to what it meant. And I grew up very humble. I've worked hard to get the things that I have in life. And it's been times where I've owned multiple houses, multiple cars, because the world sees success as being financial reward. You know, we've all fallen in that trap. And so what that has made me do is to pull away from my sons, because to get those things, you've got to work hard. You've got to do a long hours. You've got to make good investments. And quite often it's been my wife who's had to sort of pull me back in and say, you know, hey, before you sit down for the day, can you just interact or say something to the boys? Or you know, when you go to a Home Depot for the listeners in America, or, you know, a hardware store for anyone listening to a show outside the US, I'll go and come back. And my wife will say, well, you know, why didn't you take the boys? I'm like, well, do I need to take them? Would they want to come? And she said, well, you've got to teach them. So I think that the challenge has often been because I haven't had that guidance or understanding. It seems strange, but there's some very simple things that you don't know. And even I was joking with my wife a couple of days ago about this, you know, that her dad is very, very handy, does a lot of stuff around the house. I get my honey-do list. Right. And there's, you know, sometimes I put things off, and it's like, there's an element because I'm a man not wanting to do these things, but there's also an element of, hey, you're moving me outside my skill set. I've never, like, you know, put drywall up in a house before. I've never done some basic electrics and stuff, you know. And my mum did an amazing job in pushing me out into the world. You know, she was a father and she was a mother, but there's just those nuances across my life in general, when it's just like, well, I've never done those things. Right. So it's hard. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad that you brought up, like, such simple tasks too, because I think a lot of people do not realize that it is important to do those things, because I think we get caught up in our own head, right? About providing, like you said, you needed to provide, you need to invest, you need to work. And, you know, there's two things. So it's always difficult when a father is not, like, you never met him, he's not in your life. And it's also difficult if your father lives with you and is not present.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So, so you don't want to become that guy, right? Yes. Nobody wants to be that person. I didn't have a father either. He didn't even claim me at birth. And, you know, he came around, I think, once in a blue moon. So it's whatever. But you're right. There is an element that still misses, even though people around us that love us try to fill up that void. There still is a little bit of a void. Right. So I think it's important that you do fun things. Be goofy. You know what I'm saying? Like, be goofy, be fun. And because remember, those moments are going to flee. They're not going to be here forever. They go by super fast, Simon. You blink your eye, your boys are grown. You know what I'm saying? So make them all count, you know, make every single moment of it count. And then you can really catch up to whatever it is you want to do later. You know?
No, it is the truth. And, you know, and all these experiences, as we often say, you know, adversity is a gift. And I know you say that as well, is that, yeah, it does change your mindset. You have to take the blessings for it. And you're absolutely right. And my mum said that to me recently. You know, she said, Simon, look at the things that you've achieved. You've right. done this from people that have a stable family environment. You know, most things in life are it's all a mindset. It really, it really is all a mindset. But there's some people, I learned very early on, but there's some people that see the end goal, and there's some people that see the things that stand in their way. You know, all I ever see is the end goal. There's lots of people that see barriers in life. Oh, I can't do this because I haven't got a degree. We'll go and get a degree. You know, I can't do this because I don't have a car. We'll get 2-3 jobs, you know, buy a car. I always just see the end goal. I don't see the barriers that stand in the way. And it's okay if people do, but, you know, to be successful and have a fulfilled life, you've got to see the end goal and remove those barriers, because I'm a great believer, you know, you can achieve most things in life if you really put your heart and soul to it. You can't necessarily, you know, I can never be Nina, I can never be anyone else. I can only be the best version of myself. And when you stop comparing yourself to others, that's also very freeing as well.
It really is. And that's funny you mentioned that. I was talking about that just earlier today with another person I was interviewing, and we were talking about comparison and how hard it is right now too, because I think us as coaches and people that are trying to pour into others and building our empire and our business, right? There is a tendency to want to look at what the other person is doing. And there is a tendency to see how they advertise and how are they doing and how big they are. And why does this person have, you know, 52 million followers and I have a few thousand? Like, what's up with that, right? And so it's very easy to get to do that. So I decided about maybe about 2 years ago that I will not look at the numbers anymore. So I don't. I literally do not. I don't know how many people follow me, how many people don't. I don't know how many podcast. I know because I'm a podcast coach. He knows I have quite a few thousand downloads. I don't know that. You know. And I think it's just, you know, important to do that. Now, I will say that I had to check myself too, because I got so into the podcasting and doing, you know, the coaching and everything that I'm doing. Plus I have a full-time job. I'm a director of culinary operations, right? So I have all this stuff going on. And I realized that I was pouring more into my guests and into my clients and stuff than I was into my own family. And I had to check myself on that. I had to check myself, you know, you realize there's something missing. Yeah,
you do. I mean, you know, finding balance is really key. And here's one thing I often say, you know, don't seek success, seek to be a person of value. And particularly around podcasts and everything's like, you know, because how do you determine success? Here's one thing that I have learned. I've got a few friends, very high net worth, very successful, you know, multi-millionaires. some even in the sports world. And no matter what goal they have, there's another goal, and there's another goal. And we're all like that, you know. Success is something which is often ongoing, and it's how do you define success? Because you want one house, then you want a holiday home. When you've got a holiday home, then you want another one. So on my podcast, I think I was 7 episodes in. I interviewed a guy, and he was talking about his marriage, going through a tough time. Mentioned that he had battled sort of pornography, and he sort of destroyed his sort of marriage. And he was really hesitant as to whether he should share it, Nina. And then we spoke offline, saying, "You know, look, if you don't want me to air the episode, I'm going to respect your wishes, you know. But right. I think there's a message in there for what a lot of people are struggling with." And then we aired the episode, and then the following day after the episode came out, and this was my 7th episode, I think it was 7th or 8th. I had an email. So I'm a Brit living in America. I interviewed a gentleman in Colorado. I had an email from a guy in New Zealand, and he said that I am like your guest. He said, I have battled pornography. He said, it's tearing havoc in my marriage. He said, I was about to walk out the door and say goodbye to my wife and kids and not return. And he said, I listened to your podcast. Wow. And he said, it inspired me to turn around.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, if I do nothing else, and I'm getting goosebumps sharing that story now.
Wow.
If I do nothing else with my podcast, that is, you know, a change in someone else's life. And if you measure my podcast or any podcast or any business or personal achievement by success, you're only ever going to be disappointed. I mean, that touched someone, you know, so adding value into someone is far greater. So similar to you, I don't care about one download, two. I mean, I'll always remember that. That was a key message to me. That changed someone's life.
And not just changed someone's life, you changed a family's life. There's a big difference, right?
Yes.
Now think about that episode not coming out, him leaving his family, right? Now you're having children that are destroyed, right? Children that are hurting, a wife that is hurting, a man that doesn't know if he can get out of this situation. So think about that. It's not just that one guy. It just changed the trajectory of his whole family.
That's huge.
And that's what I think. That's why, Simon, that's why we do what we do, right? This is why we're getting into podcasting. We are literally feeling like there's people that we have to touch, lives that we have to impact. And this is the best way to do it, is to collaborate. You know what I'm saying? And to speak what we know and well, and to speak with people so they can share their lives. I mean, I love listening to people's stories. It's an amazing thing, you know?
And you touched on earlier about comparison with the person you interviewed today. I mean, you know, I think someone once said, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And it is very true, because, you know, it's one of those, like I said, you know, it's never enough. And when you compare yourself to others, you're only ever disappointed. But I think on one of the key significant turning points, you know, in my life, there's been a lot of wins, but there's been a lot of losses. And I think my consistent wins, you know, I'm sort of 43 this year, my consistent wins are only really coming from a sole focus on who I am and being the best version of myself. Because when you try to imitate someone else, we all look at the competition. I try to work out what other people are doing in podcasting, in business, but I take what they're doing and turn it into my own way, because the only person, or the only greatest person that I can be, is the greatest version of myself.
Right.
And I think once you do that, you then focus on, you know, I'm a man of faith, and I don't believe that anyone has all the gifts. We've all been given one gift. Now, once you focus on, well, what are my strengths? What are my skills? What are my abilities? You know, one thing for me is connection. I can go into most sales pitches, you know, instantly get rapport, get connection. Oh, we love Simon. Yeah. Bye, bye, bye. You know, and that's one of my gifts. So I don't need to try and be, you know, this big entrepreneurial person like our friend Jeff Lopes and anyone else. I just need to be me and play to my strengths.
And that's it.
And once you do that, you know, my success has then come. So yes, we need to look outwardly as to what other people are doing in business and life to try and inspire and grow us. But you should, I'm a great believer, you need to meet success with admiration. You know, a lot of my friends that are successful, I admire what they've done. And that admiration inspires me to action. How can I get better? Do I need to go back to school? Have I got to think of an idea? Because if I just try to compare myself with them, then I'm trying to be them. And if you try to be them, you then just blend into background. And I don't want to be them. I want to be the best version of me. And I think that's where a lot of people fall into that trap. My financial rewards, my life rewards have come when I've tried to be the best version of myself. and identified one of my skills and abilities. Like I said, I believe every person has at least one skill. No one has all the gifts, even if they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if they think they do. That's a good one. That's true. And I also believe that even in your gift, you know, make room to grow in that gift. You know, don't think you just got it and you know it all either, because you don't know it all. And it's good to have, I don't call it mindset. If you've been listening to my podcast, you probably know I call it mind flow, because I feel like our mind is always supposed to be flowing and growing. It's not supposed to just be set in us thinking that we know it all. We know what we're, you know, just this is the only way to do things. It's not. There's a lot of different ways to do things. I also love the way you touched before when we were speaking about the fact that you don't see yourself as a victim or as an, you know, as things coming like against you. Like same thing with admiring someone who has a lot of finances or is well off, is wealthy, whatever. I'm the exact same way. I've never sat there and was jealous of someone having something, you know, oh my God, why do they have that big house? And I don't have time for that. Like my brain doesn't even go there. Right. I'm Hispanic as well. And I've never felt also like I'm a victim either. You know, even though people have tried to tell me that I am, yeah. I just am not. Just not my, that's just not the way my brain works, you know? So growing up for you then, being, you know, interracial, your parents were interracial couple, and of course you are interracial, right? So how was that for you? I mean, did you find that to be just regular?
Well, and here's a weird thing. So I'm going to give you a list as a bit of context, maybe of a different sort of cultures between England and America, because you know, I did grow up in a very sort of white, affluent, albeit we were humble. You know, I lived in sort of social housing. We did grow up in a very affluent area, and it's most probably on paper the top sort of four or five towns in the country, in the UK. You know, it's a very, very affluent area. Predominantly, you know, sort of Caucasian as well, you know, predominantly white. So in my school, I think in my year, I was most probably, I think there's around 120, 130 kids. I've got my yearbook picture of it, but I was the only like black kid in my year. So like 130 kids and me. Here's the weird thing where it's difficult to try. If you get into trouble, they remember you because, you know, you're the odd one out. So it was hard to get into trouble and get away with it. But I'm sure there was, and this is a mindset as well, I'm sure there was, and I remember the occasional comment, but I can't really recall any difference being treated against me. And if there were, my inner circle of friends would very quickly come to my defense, you know, and that person, you know, would be slapped around a little bit or be told, you know, we're not going to stand for that stuff. So I often find it fascinating, and people do when I tell them that, you know, like 120, 130 kids in my year at school, I was the one black kid, but I can't really remember any racism. And I sort of say to people, you know, why do we think that is? Was that because there was 129 families there that had the moral compass and explained the differences? You know, were they well educated? Were they well rounded? What was it that caused that? And we know quite often with kids, they don't see different ethnic backgrounds until the world tells them, you know, that you're different. And here's the thing is, I would say, I had this conversation only the weekend. Kids do see color. You know, sometimes when people say, I don't see color, you know, I think that's the wrong thing to say. We do see color. What we're saying really, what those people are saying is that color doesn't change my judgment. It doesn't change my outcome. And then we do it. So yeah, people did see me as being this brown kid, but it didn't change their judgment. And why was that? You know, a lot of it is, it is a mentality, but when we break through those barriers and when we open up to different ethnic groups, you know, you being Hispanic, we're all the same deep down. I think I've been privileged to travel to 30, 35 different countries. And what have I surmised in my 43 years? Everyone is trying to live the best life that they can, no matter where they are. And, you know, I think we often need to remember that. If you open yourselves up to different communities, you'll be surprised how similar you really are. So there were troubling times in my childhood, but most often, I've got to say that I had a good group of people. And the weird thing is, particularly when I joined the police, if I did suffer any racism, it was from black people saying, what are you doing? You know, in England, we call them a bounty, sort of white on the inside, black on the out, or brown on the outside. You know, bounty's okay. A chocolate bar. It's got white coconut inside and chocolate on the outside. And I'm like, you know, they'd say you're trying to act white. Well, what does acting white really
mean?
Look like?
Yeah,
you
know, I get that too.
Yeah, I'm like, what I am is English, you know. And I think we need to go back to some of that stuff. Yeah, so it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating for you too, Simon, because right now you're raising two boys in this climate that we're in, right? So you have to pour that same beautiful thought process into them so that when they go to school, they're not being bombarded with all of this stuff too, you know, seeing, you know, the seeing of different colors, not the problem. The seeing the different color differently is the problem. Right.
Yes.
So, you know, to raise your boys, my boys are all grown. And so, you know, we raise them like they don't care. They don't care what color you are. You can come up to them purple. If you're a good person, they're good to go. But, you know, I'm the same way. I'm like, please don't tell me you don't see color. Of course we see color, and color is beautiful. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like when somebody says they don't see color, it's almost like they're saying color is bad. Like seeing color is bad. Yeah. You know, and instead of just saying, yeah, okay, it's my brown friend or, you know, whatever, just my friend, period. How about that? You know, like when people say, oh, where are you from? Oh, Connecticut. No, where are you really from? Connecticut.
Yes. Yeah.
And
I always say to people, and I sort of try and help them out a little bit. And again, this is okay. I think we become very sensitive surrounding. Well, can I even ask? And someone will say to me, you know, where are you from? And I say, I'm from England. You know, and either I instigate or they come back and say, you know, where's your heritage from? Oh, well, my father's Nigerian, you know, my mum's English. And then I sort of go on to tell them, you know, I've been to South Africa, but I've never been to Nigeria. You know, I mean, Africa is a part of my DNA. It's a part of my heritage. Right. But I am English, and that's all I really am, you know. So I think it is. Right. We draw a lot on. There's a lot of our identity. My youngest son was born here in the US, my older one in England. If you ask the true British son who moved here when he was one, where he's from, he might just say America. You ask the younger one that was born in the US where he's from, he loves all things, you know, British. He'll say he's English and stuff, you know, and it's just and we allow him to do that because it's his heritage. It's finding his identity. It's being defined wider than the color of your skin, you know. And we went to a nursery, what we call in England like a garden center, and they had like a sort of some food there, and they were setting plants and this type of stuff, and there was mostly 200-300 people there. And my youngest son, he was mostly 7 at the time, just before his birthday, he said, Dad, he said, you're the only black person here. And I looked around and he was right, and I said, son, I said, just you know, all these white people work for me, you know. And he burst out, we all burst out laughing, but he had identified that, whereas me, this is where I said I don't see myself as a victim. I hadn't even noticed
that I
was any different than them. I was just a father with his two sons, you know, having to be a different color than me. So
they're lighter than you, your boys.
Yes. So my wife is white, so technically they're now like a quarter.
Yeah, like a quarter Nigerian, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good for you. And that's good. You know, that says a lot though, Simon, because you're building your own bridge, you're doing your own thing, and you're not looking at yet another opposition trying to put on you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I see it anyway in my life as well. Like, you know, I've had adversity. Yes, I've gone through things in my life, but that's because of life, period. It had nothing to do with the Caucasian person, the rich person, this person. It literally, because life is life, you know?
Yes.
And I'm the same way. I have my eye on the prize, on the goal, you know, which is to really impact people's lives and live a life that's authentic. That's really my mission, right? All the rest of it will come when it comes. Right. So I love that you're pouring into young men's lives as well, because you're taking all of that knowledge and, you know, and also like a fresh perspective too. Instead of what the media is trying to say or other things are trying to say, your social media and all that, you're actually taking that fresh perspective. Like, no, you make you, you know, and that's a beautiful thing. So kudos to you on that. Very good.
Yeah. Well, and even, you know, when I moved here, I joined the police at 19. When I moved to the US, I had a 2-year degree. And I knew I was lucky because of my background. You know, the British police is still one of the best in the world. I knew those skills were going to afford me in no matter whatever life that I did. But I had to go back to night school and get a degree. And were there times when it was 1-2 o'clock in the morning and I was writing, you know, essays? Yes. Did I want to be doing that? No, I was in my 30s. But, you know, you've got to constantly grow and better yourself. It's not as in, hey, what someone's going to give me. You've got to go out and work for these things. Yes.
That's true.
Challenging. Yeah.
So before I let you go, I do want to talk to you just quickly about what you do coach with. What is it that you coach? What are you doing?
Yeah.
I know you do podcast coaching, I thought you said, but is there other things?
Yeah. And so it's interesting. So, and I have my own unique style of life. You know, it resonates with some people. It doesn't with others. But and actually, interestingly, recently, a woman said to me, hey, why don't you coach women? Because I think they might resonate with some of the things that you said. I said, well, you know, I focus primarily on men because that's the sort of the adversity that I went through. And that's the sort of the skills that I have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the desire of my heart. But really, the things that I do, I can sort of coach to anyone. But large parts of it is looking at, you know, we often ask our, you know, what is your legacy? What's the legacy that you want to leave behind? But it's something that we normally ask ourselves in our later years. And it really ties into this sort of the mindset of being successful. So I sort of start with these young men asking, you know, what is the legacy when you're, hopefully you're 70, 80, 90 years old or older, what is it that you want to be known for? And then I said, well, okay, well, I want my sons to respect me. I want to be successful. I want to have had my own business. Okay, so that's where you want to be when you're 80. And here you are now, you're 20, 25, 35. What are the things in between them where you're missing? Because you're going to be falling short in some of those areas. So really, I call it sort of mindset coaching, life coaching, whatever you choose to call it. I think the best experience is just using your life to inspire others.
Yep.
We then look at, okay, so if you want to retire being the CEO of your own company, you don't have a company right now. You know, what's your idea? What's your goal to get there? You know, you want your sons to remember you, that you were the dad that was always there. You know, my dad was at every practice, you know, rain or shine, win or lose. Okay, so that's when you're 80. Let's go back to now. Are you doing those things? You know, is your phone going and I've got another meeting? And some of these things are about myself as well. It's like, okay, you know, five minutes, 15, 20 minutes. So I really coach people to understand, okay, what is the outcome, your legacy? Write that down. I don't believe people do that enough in their lives. What do we want it to look like, the end story? And then let's backfill from there and work out what are those steps. Because you'll find, whether it's a dream, you know, a dream without goals is just a dream, but you've got to put those, building blocks in place to get to your legacy. Otherwise you're going to get there and you're going to feel unfulfilled and unaccomplished. So what I really help people do is create the mindset to get where they need to be in 30, 40 years. So they're not looking back and saying, I've got regrets. There's unfulfilled dreams. You know, how are we going to get there?
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm glad that you're doing that. I call that what's your dash, meaning, you know, if you look on a tombstone, there's your date of birth and then it's a dash and then the day that you passed. And I always say, what is that dash though? You know, what is your dash, you know? Because you know, you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, what are we doing, right? What are you here for? Why are you here? And what do you want to do with that? I believe in giftings too. I am a woman of faith as well. And, you know, and I do believe that as well. I think we all have a gift. I think I really do. I really do believe we're born with a gift and a certain way of delivering that gift too, because me and you might be speaking the same language, but we are going to give this to the world in a totally different way. You know, I love that. I love that we can be, you know, like-minded, but not groupthink. Right? I mean, that's a beautiful thing. I love it. So, Simon, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with me today. This was really great.
It has been a great conversation. Almost too short. I mean, you could talk for hours on this, but I love any time I get a chance to share some stories, because, you know, we learn through stories. So if people love your podcast, I know I listened to a couple of episodes as I was cutting my grass this afternoon, but if they want to check out my podcast, Who Became Podcast, I'd love them to do that. But it's been an honor and a privilege to be with you. It's been a great conversation,
Thank you.
Nina. really has.
Thank you. But before I let you go, I do want you to give us all of your social media handles. I want people to follow you because I'm going to put them in the show notes. So
So everything is, so I'm on, the big ones are Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Everything is my name, Simon Osamo. I'll say my last name because it's difficult. It's Osamoh. So everything is at Simon Osamo. And the podcast, again, is Who I Became. Podcast. That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yes. Thanks, Nina. Good for you with the podcast. I love it. And guys, thank you so much for being here and being with me and Simon. I'm going to make sure I link all of his info down below so that you can follow him, listen to his podcast, support him, and reach out to him too. You may want to be a young man who wants to really be inspired and know what it is, what that end goal is, and how to get there. So I encourage you to do that. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share our podcast. And we will be here soon with just another human being sharing how to transform your thinking. This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk. No sugar added. Until next time.
This broadcast is brought to you by Winject Studios. We are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.